We are also very happy to have Art and Rhoda Yost with us this morning. They've been with us before. Many of you remember Rhoda as being Lori's big sister. They were actually both classmates of mine. The one year I was a student at Lancaster Mennonite, that's a couple years ago, and my memory is fading, and so maybe they can correct me, but if I'm remembering right, I sort of think Art was the class president. Is that right? Okay. My memory isn't completely gone. Rhoda has been a pastor at River's Edge for quite a few years, and we're happy that she's going to share the message with us this morning. At this time, I will read the scripture verses that she has suggested. God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. That was from 1 Peter 4:10 and from 2 Corinthians 5:14 to 15. For Christ's love compels us because we are convinced that one died for all and therefore all died. And he died for all that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. Blessings, Rhoda, as you share God's message with us.
Well, good morning and happy Mother's Day to you, mothers, maybe mostly grandmothers. Still, we had to be mothers first, right? So I was with Steve. I'm on the Bishop Discernment Committee for River's Edge, Conestoga River District, that's what it is, and was talking to Steve about a class I taught at Pathways Institute about unnoticed women of the Bible, and so you can thank him for inviting me here to share little bits of that teaching, just a little bit of it. So today is Mother's Day, and we honor our mothers, and for many of us it brings fond memories, as Merle said, my memory's gone too, Merle, of our mothers, but it also for many has sadness, and for many reasons people feel sad on Mother's Day. Some is because of alienation of family, some is maybe we're hoping to be a mother and never were a mother. And some is just perhaps because the expectations of our culture or things that they have felt over the years that if they're going to be a good mother, they have to look like this or operate in this certain mold. And maybe they're feeling like, it's not me. I don't fit the mold. I felt like that a lot, actually. I remember discussions with other friends of how many cans of peaches they did and how much spring house cleaning they did. And I thought, oh Lord, I don't fit that mold at all. So I understood that that's kind of in my life story as well. But in the next little while, I hope that we can get a glimpse of the fact that the 1 Peter 4 passage is true for all of us. God has given us each a gift from his wide variety of spiritual gifts. And so that's what we want to look at. We're going to dive in and look at a few glimpses. I'm going to hop quickly through these stories of women that you may or may not have heard very much about. They will be, if I remember to forward them, they will be on the screen with the passages if you want to look them up. I'm not going to read all of them. That would be take too long. So you can see the passages, and if you want to look at them more later, that's fine. So we're going to dive in and get to know some of the gifts and abilities that these women have brought. The first one I want to introduce you to, so hold on a minute, I'm going to get her to tell her story for you. I won't be able to keep that. So good morning. I am a seller of purple, as you can imagine. I'm wearing my purple. And my name is Lydia. I was a businesswoman. I am a businesswoman from the city of Thyatira. which is in your current day, Turkey, I do believe. And I, for many years, learned how to make purple dye from the sea mollusks out of the sea. And then as time went on, we also learned how to make dye from plants, which was a little less messy. But we made beautiful purple fabric from it. It was expensive and it was elegant. But I began this business of selling the purple and had a successful business. But in spite of the successful business that I had, there was this emptiness inside of me and a lack of peace. I even took my business to the city of Philippi, and it was so successful that I was able to buy a home there, a pretty large home. But this lack of peace and emptiness that I felt was pervasive. I always knew there was a God, and I always was hoping to please him. So I tried to make this God happy, and I heard that the Romans had designated a special place down by the river in Philippi for the Jews to go and pray. So one Sabbath day when I was there, I decided to go and see what's happening there. Maybe that would give my God happiness. So I went that morning. Lo and behold, a certain man named Paul showed up at that gathering, and he began to teach, and he started talking about this man, Jesus. And then he said, but he wasn't only a man. He was the Messiah. He came to deliver you from your sin and to restore your relationship with God and to give you the peace that you've been longing for. He talked about his death and his resurrection, that he was alive again, and that he conquered death. And as I listened to his story, I knew it was true. I just knew it was true. And that day, I made a decision to follow Jesus. I asked Paul and his friend Silas if they would come home to my house and tell us more, teach us more. And they agreed. And as they taught, my extended family was there. My servants were there. All of my household, as we lived there, became followers of Jesus. It was an exciting day. But soon, the local government wasn't too happy with Paul's teaching, and they threw him in jail. But this God, that was no problem, because he could deliver them from jail. And so soon they were brought out of jail again, and they came again to my home. And by this time, we had gathered there. We were gathering for worship and honoring Jesus and wanting to learn more. And Paul stayed for a few days and encouraged us as a group, now a fellowship of believers meeting there. Great peace flooded my soul for the first time. And I realized that everything that I had, the ability to make purple dye, the ability to sell purple cloth, the ability to have a large home where I could invite people and we could meet for worship, it was all from God. And it was all for him. It was all to give honor and glory to him. It changed my life. My business, my abilities, my life now had purpose and meaning. It wasn't the end of the story either. I didn't stop having a business. I kept traveling back and forth from Thyatira to Philippi. And as I went back to Thyatira, guess who I was talking about? Jesus. And eventually, there was a church also, a fellowship of believers meeting in Thyatira. It was all because of Jesus. He made all the difference. Thank you for inviting me here to tell my story. So what did you hear? What had God given her? And by the way, I really like interaction, so please feel free to speak up when I ask those questions. We heard what Lydia had, what God had blessed her with, right? Different things God had blessed her with. And now she could share those and minister. It wasn't likely that it was a very in-the-box, normal kind of woman thing to be doing in her culture. But God had blessed her and gifted her. A few other women in the New Testament were also actually named. Let's see if I can not be bumping this thing. There are a few other people that are named in the New Testament as church leaders, a few other women. I'm not going to talk much about Priscilla and Aquila. They were missionaries. They did a lot of things. I'm sure you've been familiar with them. But there's two other women that maybe are not as familiar. They're only mentioned in like one verse. So one that was mentioned is Nympha in Colossians 4:15. Paul is greeting the brothers and sisters in Laodicea, and he specifically mentions Nympha and the church that meets at her house. So again, the fact that he mentioned her and the church that meets in her house would indicate that she was also wealthy enough to have a home and that she had believers gathered there, and she was likely leading that fellowship of people together. Then there's Chloe in 1 Corinthians 1:11. And Chloe also had a household, and her name is mentioned. And she sent a delegate of people from her household to go to take to Paul the problem of that they heard of divisions in the church. First chapter of 1 Corinthians. That division, who is leader? Who's the leader? Is it Paul? Is it Silas? Who's the leader? This quarrel that they were having. And Chloe's household sent a group of people to talk to Paul about this issue that they were troubled by, and then Paul addresses it for us. So again, Chloe likely had a household, likely had enough money to have her home for those people to gather, and she must have been concerned over the leadership and sent people to Paul. So these women, they used their means, they used their gifts, they used their wisdom, their hospitality, for the sake of God's kingdom. Interesting, and hopefully it encourages us. Now, just want to have a little picture here I found, because sometimes when we think of household in our culture, we think of a mother, a father, and their children, but not likely in the early church time period. So likely it was extended families living together, servants living there. And this is a sketch I found of what someone imagined or knew from study that the homes may have looked like, the home of Lydia and Nympha may. So a courtyard in the center, and then around the edge, other rooms and the living areas that they would have cooked and had their other activities. So likely this was more what they... So you can see how they would have had a gathering place in the middle of the home for their fellowship, the church fellowships to meet. Home church, as we would more likely call them today, right? Let's go on to another one. This is... she's probably more known to many of you. Her name is Phoebe, but I want us just to look at her for a few minutes because she was a pretty amazing woman. In Romans 16... Paul commends her. Right at the beginning of the chapter, he commends her to the church in Rome. And many biblical scholars believe that him saying that indicates that she was the one that he asked to take the letter actually to the church in Rome. And that she traveled there with the letter and she read it or recited it. I heard someone thinking that she may have even recited it because of wanting to be sure she didn't lose it on the way there. I don't know if that's true or not, but nonetheless, Paul realized that she could, that he valued her so much and that he trusted her to be his letter carrier and spokesperson for reading and maybe even explaining the book, the letter to the Roman church. He also called her several other things in the beginning of that chapter. He called her sister, in the same way that he called Timothy and Philemon brother, which wasn't just a casual term. It was actually fellow laborer, fellow worker with me. You're my sister and brother in the work of this ministry together. She's also called diaconess, or translated in English most of the time as deacon. But I also noticed it could be translated also as servant or minister as well. And likely the deacon position in Phoebe's time was not in the same way that we understand it today. I read that as far as church governance, as we recognize deacon, didn't evolve till about the 4th century. And then there was some Jewish insight in the Complete Jewish Bible that might help us understand Phoebe's day deacon. They called her the Shamash of the congregation. I guess I'm saying that right. I'm not a Hebrew scholar, so. And a Shamash leads and directs public worship. So again, it's very likely that Phoebe had a lot of leadership qualities and gifts that God had given her. And then she's also called in that same chapter a patron or a benefactor, all indicating again that she had wealth and financial resources, and that she was probably very likely supporting other ministries and perhaps even supporting Paul in his missionary journey, maybe the one to Spain that was mentioned in the chapter before. So Phoebe, God had gifted her with lots of qualities. Courage. Think of her traveling. It was like 800 miles that she had to travel carrying that letter. It doesn't say if she traveled with anyone else or if she was traveling alone. That would have been a rather unlikely and unsafe thing for her in that time period. But she was courageous, and she used whatever God gave her and the opportunities that God gave her to continue, and we can be blessed by having that letter to the Romans today as well. So let's skip to the Old Testament. I told you we're going to hop around, so I hope you can stay with me as we hop around. We're going to go to the Old Testament and look at some very different kinds of women. Opportunities that God gave them and the skills that they had. The first one we're going to talk about is Jehosheba. That's a mouthful. Jehosheba. This is in 2 Chronicles, and it was a very dark time in Judah's history. Followed Manasseh, who was so evil. And in this story, Ahaziah was the king, and he reigned for 1 year in Jerusalem. Now, he was encouraged by his mother, Athaliah, to do evil in the sight of the Lord. There's a story for Mother's Day, huh? And he was killed in a military campaign. And after he was killed, his mother, Athaliah, decided that she was now going to be the queen. But she must have been a little paranoid about it, because in order to secure herself as queen, she decided that she would have all the rest of the royal family killed. How's that for a mother? Oh, wow, I'm telling you, this woman was evil. It's hard to imagine that kind of evil in a mother. But God had a woman there in that time and in that space, whose name was Jehosheba. And she stepped up and acted on what God had given her to do. And she basically kidnapped the youngest member of the family, Joash was his name, and hid him in the temple with his nurse for 6 years, risking her own life, really. Imagine if Athaliah was willing to have all the rest of her family killed, she would not have hesitated to also have Jehosheba killed. She stepped up. She had wisdom, resourcefulness to think, where do you hide a 2-year-old that they won't be found? In the temple. After when Joash was 8 years old, the priests decided and Levites decided it was time to crown him the king. And so they had this big coronation service for him. And Athaliah heard all the noise and going on, and she came to see what was going on. And when she realized, she cried treason to them. But the guards that were around killed her. And Joash became king. He became a king who was recognized actually for repairing the temple, which was a good thing. But an even more significant part of Jehoshaphat's rescue is that she also rescued the ancestry, the line to David. Joash continued the line to David, which also then continued the lineage of Christ, as we know. What faithfulness! God just had her there in that space, in that time, at that place, for that one opportunity. And she faithfully stepped up and did what God called her to do. Now, get your hard hats on. We're going out in a different place now. We're going out to the building sites. This woman, until I did this study, I never really remembered this woman being in the Bible or who she was or what she did. There's one verse about her. Her name is Shira. She's either the granddaughter or great-granddaughter of Joseph. Ephraim was her father, it says, and he had some sons. And his sons made the kind of unwise decision to steal their neighbor's cattle, which the neighbors didn't take too kindly to. And so they actually killed the sons. Well, Ephraim was discouraged and his hopes for the future kind of died with his sons. But after a time, he also had another son, and then he had this daughter whose name was Shira. One verse says what Shira did. Shira built 3 cities. That's it. Imagine that. She built Lower and Upper Beth Horon and Uzan Shira. How'd she know how to do that? I mean, that was not a woman's job, for sure. Even in our culture, it would probably not be so much. She must have planned. She must have drafted. She must have hired the workers and managed the project. She helped with the obstacles, likely, that they came across. Just imagine all that she had to do, that God gave her the ability to do. And I thought, I was like, wait a minute. Okay, she was the relative of Joseph, right? What did Joseph do after the famine? He built
storehouses.
Thank you. I knew that. Yeah, built storehouses. So likely, maybe she had some gifts that were passed along from her family members, but nonetheless, she did it. And she built us with strong foundations too, which we'll see why I say that in a minute. But these are the three. Here's some pictures. The top two pictures, you can't see them very well. I should have made them bigger. But the top two are actually current day Arab villages that still stand at these places where her cities were built. Interesting. They're small. I looked it up yesterday because I wasn't sure where they were, but it said the northern West Bank area. Hopefully they're still there. Now, the bottom picture is a drawing. In the book of Joshua, actually, there's a story that happens actually between her two cities, the upper and lower Beth Horon cities, where God rained down stones and confused the enemy and destroyed the enemy. And the drawing at the bottom from what I read, the upper Beth Horon is on the top, and there's a road you see going across around the bottom there, was apparently a narrow and kind of dangerous road to go on. And if the enemy got caught in there, there was not much way to retreat. So that story is in Joshua, taking place here between the cities that she built. Then there's another passage in 2 Chronicles 8:5, where Solomon, it says that Solomon rebuilt the walls and installed some barred gates on these cities that Shira had built. So she must have built them well. She must have built strong foundations. And it caused me to stop and ask myself, what kind of foundations are we building? Most of us aren't building with stone and mortar, but we are building foundations. And I want to say to those of you here who, many of you are on the end of life that I'm on, not the young side of life. We're not done. We're not done building foundations and standing on the foundations that we've been building. So I want to encourage you to remember that. We can still build strong foundations of faith and prayer, trust, integrity for our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. As they see us facing the obstacles and the challenges of becoming older, what do they see? Hopefully they'll see the strong foundations that we've been building. But what character and abilities Shira had, and she just stepped up there and built those cities, which was what God had in her, gave her. The other one in the Old Testament to look at is just another one single verse, is in Nehemiah. We know Nehemiah came back from exile, and his vision was to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, right? And he had this plan of how to get it done quickly by dividing the sections of the wall up and assigning different men and their crew to building that section, to repairing that section. And it was a man's job, most assuredly. But there's this one verse, again, just I recently saw, chapter 3, verse 12, says that Shalom was a leader of the district in Jerusalem, but he and his daughters repaired a section of the wall. Wow. Those daughters must have been strong workers and working in a man's world for sure. But he and his daughters, I just read a biblical fiction on this story, and that writer imagined the daughters having the plumb line and making sure the wall was being built straight. We don't know what their task was, but nonetheless, again, God gave them this ability and this time and this moment, and they stepped up and did probably what was likely unexpected of them to do. So these are just a few of the overlooked or unnoticed women that we have in the Bible. There are many others in the Old Testament and in the New. There were warriors, social activists, deliverers, prophets, disciples, and financial supporters. There was an apostle, a theologian, seamstress, hospitality, teachers. The gifts are wide and very varied that God has given. And you too here today have been given opportunities. You live in this space at this time because that's where God has gifted you to live. And he's given you abilities. He's given you a heart for certain things. He's given you passion. All of this he's given us. Not to make us great, not for us to compare ourselves with one another and say, oh, I wish I could be like that. Or, oh, no, he's given those things to us. What? What did 1 Peter say? To serve one another. And the Corinthians passage said, those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him. So all of these things that he's given us are for him. They're not for us. They're for him. So let's not spend our energy and our time comparing ourselves. Let's celebrate the opportunities and the gifts that God has given us and serve him with them. And celebrate one another's gifts that you bring together. That's the beauty of the church, together, as you serve together. I want to point out one last woman in the book of Acts, 17:33. Paul is speaking in Athens, and when he spoke, it says, when he spoke of the resurrection of the Lord, some people mocked him. They laughed with contempt. Some wanted to know more, but some believed. And one woman, that's all it says, Damaris, was one of those who became a follower of Jesus that day. I was thinking, along with anything else or nothing else that people say or remember about me, I hope that's one thing they remember and they know. And they can say, she was a follower of Jesus. And I know that's what you're hoping too. That above all the other things that could be said about us, that people would say, she or he was a follower of Jesus. And all that they had was surrendered. All that they were given was surrendered to serve one another and to point people to Jesus. God bless you as you walk and bless others with the abilities and gifts that he's given you and serve in the places that he's given you. And a quick story, when we moved to Brethren Village, it was one of those times that I went through like, Lord, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know what I have that can be used for you here. But as you say those things to the Lord, he shows you, right? He begins to show you. Cause I was thinking, well, I can't go out. I have to stay pretty close to, and I can't go visiting people, and I'm a people person. That's what I've always done. And I love to sit with Bible studies, but I can't really go to any place. And then the Lord said, you have an apartment. What's keeping you from inviting anybody to your apartment? Oh, that's right. I do. And I have a table. And we can sit around that table. And so that's one of the things that God's given me to do. I invited the ladies in my hallway to start coming and sitting around the table and reading scripture together and talking about it. And what a fun thing to see how God has brought us all different backgrounds, and fun to read his word together. So don't ever give up. God continues to show us. And we're not finished on this earth until he takes us to be with him, right? So blessings to you as you are. I wanted just to say that in the teaching that I did at Pathways Institute on these women was much, I had many, many more women because it was an hour and a half long. I brought a handout in case any of you are interested in looking up some of those women that you may not have. I brought a handout, and it's back there behind on the little table with a list of many women and the passages where you could learn to read about them, just in case you're interested in doing that. So happy Mother's Day to you. Enjoy your day together.